time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Steps back, three. Yes, sir.
Get a shot up. This is for the win.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to the start of another week of overtime. It's the Monday, July 8th edition of the program. It's your boy Bert back on the radio with you. You can track me down at any time at Bert ESPN on Twitter, Bert at ESPNSiouxFalls.com, the email address, and of course the ESPN hotline number. You want to weigh in on the show, you want to contest with us, you want to win big with overtime, that number 605-362-3776. Cranking it up for our first full week of the month of July. Certainly a ton to get to. Good, bad, ugly, and otherwise. It starts very soon with your headlines. Diving into more news with Bill Bender of the Sporting News here in about 20 minutes in hour number one. On this day in sports history, always hits on a Monday. We got it for you midway through hour number one. And we finish up the first hour of the show today with the latest from the NBA. The Sacramento Kings load up on talent. The Timberwolves make a pair of additions late last week. We'll tell you about, react to those, and tell you where they stack up in the latest odds for the NBA Finals next season. Yes, it's too early, but is it fun to go ahead and project these things? Absolutely is. We saw the debut of Bronny James. He's a little bit dinged up. Get you the latest there and more. Hour number two, headlines of the day, NFL chatter, updates on a couple of quarterbacks, including a quarterback close to a contract extension, maybe a little bit dinged up. We'll tell you the latest there on an injury to Dak Prescott and more. Major League Baseball is nearing the All-Star break. We'll be there a week from today. Latest team announcements, the odds for the World Series, and more. Minnesota Twins, by the way, absolutely positively slighted in terms of the number of players they landed on All-Star teams. We'll dive into those announcements here later in hour number two and finish up today's show with the latest and greatest in the good, the bad, and the ugly. Major League Baseball, first and foremost on the scorecard, the Chicago Cubs found a way to get a win yesterday, winning at home 5-0 against the Angels. New record for the Cubbies, 42-49. The team they're chasing for second place in the NL Central is the St. Louis Cardinals. They got a win yesterday in D.C. over the Nationals, 8-3. Cardinals now 47-42. Other finals, Southsiders lost yesterday. White Sox go down in Miami, 7-4. And the Detroit Tigers hanging around, 42-48, the new record, as they blast their way by Cincinnati yesterday.
Two is swinging a high fly ball right field, deep, going back. Benson at the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run. How about it? Zach McKinstry, two out, two run home run.
And that would be a 4-1 lead at that point. Final score, Detroit wins 5-1 in Cincinnati. Audio courtesy of WXYT. Elsewhere, San Francisco and Cleveland doing battle. The Guardians just keep on winning.
The pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to right. There she goes! A pinch hit.
And again, 5-4 the final there. Cleveland wins it. They're 56-32. Minnesota Twins doing some winning of their own. They've got the best record in the last 10 games among all AL Central teams. They continue the chase. They're now just 6 games back following a walk-off winner yesterday.
Pitch swung on and hit high in the air, deep left field. Dubon is back. He's at the base of the wall. He leaps. It's gone. And the Twins win. Christian Vasquez will walk off his former team.
Minnesota 3, Houston 2. Twins now 51-39. Duran with the win, 4-3 on the season. Treasure Island Baseball Network with the audio. Kansas City blasted their way by the Rockies yesterday in Denver, 10-1. And Milwaukee beats up on the Dodgers on the road. Big win for the Brew Crew.
The pitch hit in the air to center field. That one carrying back. Paez onto the track, turns around, watches it fly. Goodbye. Christian Yelich, dead center, two-run home run.
Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Cardinals and Nationals lead us off at 3:05 from D.C. Guardians at Tigers, 5:40 the start time. Watch that game on Fox Sports 1. Rockies at Reds at 6:10. Twins at White Sox, a 7:10 start time. Pregame coverage at 6:30 right here on the Minnesota Twins Radio Network. Your latest AL Central standings as we crank it open for this Monday, July 8th. Cleveland 56-32. They are six games better than the Twins. Twins are continuously just chipping away at that number just a little bit here. Guardians 56-32, Twins 51-39, nine games back are the Kansas City Royals with a record of 49-43, followed by Detroit 15 games back, and the White Sox have been and will be in the cellar for the rest of the season, 32 games back with a record of 26-66. The All-Star break begins a week from today. The teams are taking shape. One of the headliners this year is youngster for the Pittsburgh Pirates, the great pitcher Paul Skeens. Here is a blurb from Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on what makes the youngster so darn dynamic there in Pittsburgh.
Paul Skeens has been absolutely electric. I've watched every one of his starts, most of them in person. We saw him make a path through the minor leagues very quickly, and he's just not, I don't know how you say it, just he's undaunted. You know, nothing has gotten in this kid's way. He's got velocity, but it's not just velocity. He's got five or six pitches. He's got this thing called the splinker that's basically a splitter thrown really hard, sinking fastball hybrid that has been downright unhittable.
So far this season for Paul Skeens, 10 starts, 5-0 the record, 2.12 ERA, and a 2.6 WAR thus far this season. Again, you can only dive into the stats so much. You watch this kid play, you know he is different. One of the headliners on the All-Star teams, those announcements, full teams, we'll get to later on in the show. NBA news, of course, Klay Thompson has left the Golden State Warriors. We can still read and react to it. Of course, Steph Curry talking about what he wants for his former teammate moving forward.
You know, having Klay head on to Dallas, it's tough. It's something that I never imagined would be a reality. But, you know, you want him to be happy. You want him to be able to enjoy the game of basketball. It does suck losing Klay. There's no two ways around it.
So that's Steph Curry on his take on his former teammate. As for head coach Steve Kerr, here's what he has to say about how things will be a little bit different to start out this year.
When the season starts next year, it's going to be really weird. And I know we're all going to have that date circled when he comes back to Chase. And that will be one of the strangest, most emotional nights of all of our careers, for sure.
That's how the Golden State Warriors are thinking of next year, as if it's right around the corner without, of course, Klay Thompson. He's now a member of the Dallas Mavericks. Now, some people might say Luka Doncic, a big winner this offseason, getting a couple pieces there, maybe Joel Embiid out in Philly or elsewhere. You can take it any which way you want, but Jonathan Zaslow, I think this is a little bit of an unpopular opinion. Here's who he has as the winner as an individual this offseason.
LeBron James has had the best offseason, better offseason than anyone. Mm. If somebody wants something and they get all of it, isn't that a great offseason then? He wanted J.J. Redick as the coach, his wine-drinking pal, his podcast partner. He's his coach. He wanted his son to get drafted by the Lakers. Even though he may not be an NBA player, his son got drafted by the Lakers. He wanted to get a new contract, a lot of money. He got a new contract and a lot of money. He got everything he wanted. His MO is not necessarily what's best for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. It's what's best for LeBron James and the James family, and he got everything he wanted. No one has had a better offseason than LeBron James.
Interesting points there. LeBron James has had a good offseason, but the one thing that he didn't get that he reportedly wanted, the courtship of Klay Thompson, courtship of other players that may or may not have been available, they didn't add hardly anybody from the LA Lakers' perspective, and that might have been on the wish list for LeBron James and something he did not get. So no, not a perfect offseason for LeBron James, but I do agree with Jonathan Zaslow there. Several boxes that he had out there. I want to play with my son. I want you to draft the kid. I want to go ahead and get this. I want this coach in here. LeBron James got a pretty good deal thus far this offseason. Now are the Lakers back to being contenders? I say pump the brakes. In fact, slam the brakes on that talk. I don't think the Lakers are contenders right now, and it'll take a lot to change my mind until that season gets underway and they're playing really great basketball. Still don't really believe in that team as a contender in the Western Conference, much less across the entirety of the NBA. Now over to the WNBA yesterday. Dallas gets beat up on the road by Las Vegas. The Aces continue their surge. 13-7, the overall record. 104-85, the final there. Chicago lost in Seattle, 84-71, and Phoenix beats up on LA on the road, 84-78. The Mercury and head coach Nate Tibbetts now 11-10 on the season. No games tonight in the WNBA. Next up tomorrow night, Lynx visit the Sparks as the standalone game, a 9 o'clock jump time. NFL news. Tragic news breaking on Saturday morning that Minnesota Vikings rookie cornerback and others passed away in a fatal car accident. Here's more on the collision and the details that ended the life of Kyrie Jackson, Vikings rookie cornerback, and two of his high school teammates.
The crash happening Saturday morning in Maryland just after 3. Police say an Infiniti, allegedly driven by Corey Klingman, attempted to switch lanes while speeding, slamming into two cars, including a Dodge Charger with Jackson and his two high school teammates and former college football stars Isaiah Hazel and Anthony Lighton Jr. inside. According to police, that Charger then careening into several tree stumps. Jackson and Hazel pronounced dead at the scene. Lighton died at the hospital.
Kyrie Jackson again passing away with two high school teammates in a fatal car crash Saturday morning. That's the reporting there. As for some commentary from the people that knew Kyrie Jackson and these youngsters were taken from us way too soon, here's some reaction on the full lives that these three had ahead of them.
All three victims played football at Dr. Henry A. Wise Junior High School. Their coach, Steve Rapp, says they had full lives ahead of them.
These were three young men that were all running different races, but ultimately was going to end in the same direction. And that was professional football, husbands, fathers, great pillars of the community, and it was all cut short.
Jackson was a standout college football star at Alabama and Oregon.
VikingsTerritory.com with an article right now about the incident and the tragedy and the loss of Oregon, former Oregon cornerback Kyrie Jackson. Minnesota Vikings roster lock this season. 24-year-old was a fourth-round draft pick, pick 108, and the loses his life over the weekend with a pair of his high school teammates. Absolutely tragic news for the Vikings, the football community, Oregon, and his local high school community as well. Really tough news over the weekend for the Minnesota Vikings. Other NFL news, of course, everyone wants to dissect who's got the most to gain, most to lose this season, who's under the most pressure, least pressure to succeed. Here's what Warren Moon, former Viking quarterback and Hall of Fame quarterback, had to say about what coach across the NFL is under the most pressure this year.
For a coach, yeah, he probably has the most pressure on him in any sport. There's other players that probably do, but yeah, definitely because of what Kyle's been able to do is get his team to the pinnacle that many times and has come up short. People are going to be looking again at that to see how he handles the next time he gets on the big stage. Yeah, you do have that pressure on you that next time you get to that big game, people are going to have bigger and higher expectations on you because of what you've done in the past and how you haven't gotten it done yet.
So Warren Moon chalking it up and saying that Kyle Shanahan, the current coach of the 49ers, with the most pressure of any NFL coach this season. I'm going to respectfully disagree on that one. There's a couple that come to mind that are coaching for their jobs, chiefly Mike McCarthy in Dallas, Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia, Brian Daboll with the New York Giants. You got the Coach McDermott up in Buffalo, also on uneven, shaky ground. Mike McDaniel in Miami. There's all sorts of coaches on shaky your ground to me than Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan's been fantastic. He's a wizard. He's got the coaching tree. Everybody loves to pick from this coaching tree, the Sean McVays of the world, and everyone associated with that former Washington football team coaching staff, the assistant coaches from back in the 2012-ish era. But now you look at Coach Kyle Shanahan, what he's been able to do. You can pick him apart for the big game blunders. He was the offensive coordinator in the 28-3 meltdown for the Falcons, losing to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl not too long ago. Now, they lost the Super Bowl in 2019 to the Chiefs, lost the Super Bowl again last year, and a couple playoff exits with a really, really rock-solid roster. But when you look at it in its entirety, the overall head coaching career of Shanahan, year one, 6-10, year two, 4-12, year three, Super Bowl run, they lost to the Chiefs that year. They were 6-10 the following season, and since that time, they have won multiple playoff games every single year for the past three seasons. They beat the Cowboys and Packers 3 years ago, lost in the NFC Championship game to the eventual champion Rams that year. 2 years ago, beat up on the Seahawks, took down the Cowboys, lost to the Eagles in the NFC Championship that season, and that was the Brock Purdy elbow injury, Christian McCaffrey playing quarterback game. Last year, I don't need to rewrite the narrative again, couple playoff wins and a Super Bowl loss. I understand the criticism for Kyle Shanahan. I understand that he's being labeled as a non-big game coach. That's fine and dandy. But when you're winning multiple playoff games with top-tier talent, I really find it hard to believe that he's under that much pressure moving in to next season. Some pressure, sure. Is he trying to shake off the label? Absolutely. Do they have a great team again? And they should they go all the way? Absolutely again. But do I think he's a firing on the hot seat at all? I don't really believe so. If they miss the playoffs, maybe next year he enters on the hot seat. If they are in early exit, maybe you can put him on the hot seat. But again, there's a lot of defense for Kyle Shanahan, what he does, the ingenuity, the overall roster, and the talent, and the circumstances. I don't believe he's got the most pressure. You could put him in the top five, top 10 if you wanted to, but not the most, in my opinion. NASCAR race over the weekend, Alex Bowman won the street race in Chicago, followed by Tyler Reddick in the standings. Next up, races at Pocono on Sunday, 1:30 on USA. PGA Tour Golf, the John Deere Classic came to a close with a 28-under-par first-ever PGA Tour win for Davis Thompson. Three-way tie for second, including amateur Luke Clanton. Again, remember that name. Back-to-back events, this gentleman has finished in the top 10, 24-under-par, three-way tie for second place. Next up, the Genesis Scottish Open Thursday through Sunday. And Wimbledon now. Yesterday, Emma Navarro, the American, took down fellow American Coco Gauff in straight sets, 6-4, 6-3. Here's what Navarro had to say about the last time they met, saying, "I wasn't ready.
In January, I wasn't really ready to take on an opponent like that, and I feel like I've improved myself a lot since then, and I feel like I'm a different player now than I was then, and just more comfortable being in these positions on a big stage like that, and yeah, just definitely playing some bigger tennis for sure."
So Navarro wins 6-4, 6-3 straight sets. Jasmine Paolini defeated Madison Keys. She withdrew in the third set. And Lulu Sun took down Emma Raducanu 6-2, 5-7, 6-2. No Brits remaining on the women's side or on the men's side. This morning, Alina Svitolina took down Quinn Yu 6-2, 6-1, and Rybakina took down Kalinskaya after a withdrawal in the second round. Men's side yesterday, Sinner took down American Ben Shelton in straight sets. Medvedev advances over Dimitrov, who withdrew as well. And Alcaraz continues his torch through the field, 6-3, 6-4, 1-6, 7-5. Four-set victory over Humbert. And American Tommy Paul advances past Roberto Bautista Agut yesterday. Taylor Fritz, the American, up against it right now, down 2-0 against Alexander Zverev right now, but ahead in set number 3. Catch that on ESPN TV right now. Now into your ReliaBank headlines of the day. We got some audio, but again, diving into this tragedy over the weekend. Minnesota Vikings rookie cornerback Kyree Jackson and two former college football players were killed in a crash overnight, according to Maryland State Police. This is overnight on Saturday into Sunday. Jackson passed away after a three-car crash that occurred at 3:14 a.m. on Saturday in Prince George's County. According to police, Isaiah Hazel and Anthony Litton Jr., the two former players who were also high school teammates of Jackson's, were also killed in the crash, according to police. Hazel, 23 years old, played at Maryland and UNC Charlotte, while Litton, 24, played at Florida State and Penn State. Police say Hazel was driving a Dodge Charger with Jackson in the passenger seat when their car was struck by an Infiniti Q50 attempting to change lanes at a high speed. The Charger left the road and struck multiple tree stumps before coming to a stop. According to police, Jackson and Hazel were pronounced passed away at the scene, while Litton was transported to a hospital before being pronounced dead by hospital personnel. Neither driver of the Infiniti Q50 nor her two passengers or the driver of the third vehicle were injured in the accident. Investigators believe that alcohol may have played a role in the crash, according to police, adding that charges are currently pending. Very tragic situation. Thoughts and prayers again with Kyrie Jackson and his two high school teammates again, Anthony Litton Jr. and Isaiah Hazel. Rest in peace. The car crash over the weekend that took their lives. We will take the break and come back talking all things college football and so much more. What is the future of the Pac-12? Are they going to merge with the Mountain West? Are they going to stick to their guns and wait for a better opportunity to join a bigger conference? We'll dive into everything, including the new realignment movers and shakers out there. SMU is in the ACC. Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC. We'll dive into everything you need to know from the college football world. Bill Bender of the Sporting News joins us next on Overtime.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday edition of Overtime. Thanks for being along for the ride with us as always, right here on your Sioux Falls sports leader, ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. Believe it or not, we're less than 2 months away from the start of the college football season. Both University of South Dakota and South Dakota State have some big-time marquee games early on the schedule. USD will travel out to take on the Wisconsin Badgers. SDSU heads down to Stillwater, Oklahoma to prove it against the OK State Cowboys early on in the season. A lot to look forward to. Here to break down some of the big storylines from realignment and college football as a whole, Bill Bender, senior writer with the Sporting News, joins us now on the ESPN Hotline. Bill, it's always a blast to have you. How you been?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
And we're looking forward to talking with you. First things first, though, I got to ask you, because for me personally, all of this stuff was just hogwash before, everybody moving conferences, this and that. I knew it was coming, but it did kind of hit me a little bit different when we started to see the actual physical movement last week of Oklahoma and Texas to the SEC, to the West Coast schools joining the East Coast conferences, everything in between. What was your reaction last week to the official start of this realignment?
It's surreal in some ways. I know that word gets overused,
yep.
But to have Texas and Oklahoma two of the top 10 all-time programs in the sports history join that conference, yeah, it's huge. It shows the realignment. It shows how much money is going to be made from those games. It is a move about money and TV, but it's going to create matchups. I mean, you look at Oklahoma's schedule in particular this year, there aren't too many breaks on it. It's going to be a lot of fun watching their game.
Certainly a lot to look forward to moving forward with this realignment. It's a little bit different having the likes of Oregon and Washington and the Big Ten, and again, Stanford and others joining the ACC. Let's talk about the Pac-2, the former Pac-12, Oregon State and Washington State. How would you forecast the future there? Is it the Mountain West? Is it someone else? Is it a hodgepodge? What do you think is coming with those two teams and the future of that conference?
Well, we'll see. I mean, uncertainty, obviously, and they were the left behind. And it's unfortunate because that both of those schools have a tradition, have recognizable players, played in, you know, at least BCS bowl game.
Yep.
I remember Fiesta Bowl with Oregon State, a Rose Bowl with Washington State. Big games, big traditions, and you hate to see them left behind. I think they're probably in the short term going to be caught up in that Mountain West Conference type of, where they're going to have to rely on playing those schools, and hopefully they can elevate. But I don't think they're the last two that are going to be left behind if this realignment wheel keeps turning, if that makes sense. There'll be other schools that'll be scrambling to keep a seat on that power conference table.
Bill, I wanted to ask you, as we're continuing our chat with Bill Bender of the Sporting News, the new Big 12, there's several new teams out there. The one that hits closest to home here is the Iowa State Cyclones. Depending upon where you look, there's a couple Big 12 preseason polls out. Iowa State is about sixth in those polls. But I wanted to ask you about one of the newcomers that's projected to win the thing. That is Utah, kind of with a veteran quarterback back there for presumably year number 20 guiding that team. What's the big storyline for the Big 12 this year in the Utes, how likely are they in your eyes to get the job done and win that conference?
Yeah, you know, Kyle Whittingham's been there for 20 years now, and it does feel like Kim Rising's been there for 20 years with him, doesn't it?
Yep.
Seventh-year quarterback, a lot of experience. I think they're built to succeed. I think one of the things you're going to see with Big 12 Media Day the next couple days is there'll be a lot of talk, but like you said, how do these styles from the conferences mesh? You know, last year, BYU and Cincinnati and Houston, they struggled on their arrival into the Big 12 and made it tough for them to win some football games. But I'm wondering how Arizona, Colorado, Arizona State, Utah make that transition. I think Utah's built best to do it right away.
Certainly is true. Utah projected to win that conference. Bill Bender of the Sporting News is our guest. You can check out the work, sportingnews.com, at BillBender92 on Twitter. Also, the preseason top 25 from the Sporting News is also out. Notre Dame is your fifth-ranked team right now. Before we dive into that top 25, the Big Ten, the Iowa Hawkeyes are not in your top 25. What do you view them as? Because they like to prove people wrong there in Iowa City. What do you think the storyline is this year for Iowa?
Yeah, they're good at winning nine games no matter what with that defense, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes the offense doesn't matter. But they're one of those teams, middle-class Big Ten team, that we're going to find out what adding USC and Oregon and Washington and UCLA means for them. It's going to be tougher to get some of those wins that you feasted on in the past. So I do think Iowa's going to be right there defensively, but we need to see them move the ball and not be a punchline on offense with the quarterback, with the passing game, and those kind of things. They do play; they have an easier schedule.
Yep.
They got some games that they can win outside of that. So I look at 8-9 wins probably again.
And certainly a lot to look forward to for the Iowa Hawkeyes this year. A favorable schedule. Top 25 preseason is out right now. Sportingnews.com. Bill Bender and company, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, and Notre Dame in the top five, followed by Ole Miss, Florida State, Michigan, Alabama, and LSU to round out the top 10. Before we depart from the Big Ten talk, I wanted to talk about Michigan. Everyone wants to talk about the opportunity to win back-to-back. I know there's a lot going against Michigan. Departure of the head coach, departure of the quarterback, running back, receivers, and a lot on defense as well. You've got them eighth right now. What's the ceiling and floor for the program this year there in Ann Arbor?
You know, they lost. It's hard to win when you lose 13 guys in the NFL draft, including arguably the best quarterback in school history. So I think they're definitely going to hang around in the Big Ten. Their schedule's ridiculously hard, starting with Texas in week two. But to me, like, against that schedule, 9-3 or 10-2 would be fine. You know? And that's reality in this new 12-team world. Now, obviously, pressure to beat Ohio State's the same, but although I think there's way more pressure the other way around in that game. And to maintain, and I still think there's a little bit of a honeymoon period with Sharon, given that the program is coming off their first national championship since 1997.
And again, Michigan, sky-high expectations, I'm sure, but those will be tempered a little bit. They come in at number 8 in your top 25. Bill, also in your top 25, I'm looking for a group of 5 team. I don't really see any in there right now, but give me a group of 5 team that you really like that you would have liked to include it in your top 25 if it wasn't for the bulk and the overall depth of the Power 5.
Yeah, hard. You know, they're going to struggle to maintain ranking and those kind of things. I like Memphis. Hennigan's back, their quarterback, and they score close to 40 points per game. Probably going to be the favorite in the American Athletic Conference. And the playoff team would probably, first guess, would be American Athletic Conference, if not the Mountain West. It's funny, a lot of people like Boise this year, too, which would be kind of symbolic in some way.
Yep.
The team that was awesome in the BCS era won right away in the playoff era, New Year's Day Six Bowl, and maybe they get I think it would be kind of cool if they got that first one just because of what they meant for those Group of Five schools.
And certainly a ton to look forward to. 12-team playoff, all sorts of realignment, movers and shakers. We'll get it all sorted out before too long. Late August, the kickoff of the college football season. For the latest and greatest college football and much, much more, sportingnews.com at BillBender92. Bill, always a blast to talk to you, my friend. We'll do it again here soon before the season kicks off. Thanks so much.
Hey, please do. Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
All right. Always a blast to talk football and more. Bill Bender with the Sporting News. Again, sportingnews.com. They got the top 25 nationally out there. I went through the top 10. There's a couple intriguing teams in the top 25 that you might not think deserve to be there. The one in the top 10, by the way, that is way out there to me, but definitely one of those teams that's a little bit of a smaller program, not as successful as the other teams in the SEC. Look out for Ole Miss. The Rebels are 34-15 since Lane Kiffin took over. They come in at number 6. Last year's record for the Rebs, 11-2 on the season. Other area teams, interesting stories in the top 25. Missouri at number 11. Record last year under Eli Drinkwitz, 11-2. Made it to the Cotton Bowl. Tigers lost their defensive coordinator and have hired a replacement there, but certainly all sorts of stories there for Mizzou. Penn State at number 12. Other area teams, Josh Heupel and Tennessee at number 13. Clemson, Utah, Arizona in the top 25. A lot of teams you haven't seen ranked too often are in the top 25 to start the season. Again, this is from Sporting News. Oklahoma State, keep an eye on the Cowboys. Ollie Gordon II, of course, coming off of a recent arrest. We'll see if he's suspended for a game, a half, a portion of the season. We will wait and see. But OK State, an early opponent for South Dakota State. And again, you can view that entirety of the top 25 at sportingnews.com. I'm mad my Badgers aren't in the top 25. Hawkeye fans probably upset they're not in the top 25 either in the preseason. But certainly a win or two to start out the year will do a world of good for either of those programs and your favorite program out there as well. Bill Bender with the Sporting News then. Coming up next on this day in sports history, the latest from the NBA, the Sacramento Kings, the latest team to load up on talent. They land DeMar DeRozan over the weekend. We'll tell you what that means, the latest odds, and more coming up here on hour number one on a Monday of overtime. Don't go anywhere. Back with more of the show after this.
Get ESPN online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Monday, July 8th edition of Overtime. Stay tuned this week. Of course, we got the identity crisis coming up on Wednesday. We got the High Noon Showdown and the return of the Friday Parlay coming up on Friday. Still Twins tickets to give away. Sticks and Foreigner concert tickets to give away coming up soon as well. You can win big with Overtime with all the aforementioned contests. Always our contest line, 605-362-3776. And always important to play by the rules. You can win once every 30 days here with Overtime and ESPN Sioux Falls. Time now, though. It is a Monday. We always like to dip our toe in, dip our whole foot in, dip our whole body in to some sports history here on the show. It's time now for On This Day in Sports History.
History repeats itself.
Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner.
Well, sometimes.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
In the world of sports, there are moments that are fleeting.
And Barnes, that went high, pitch is
and some that live forever.
In the end zone!
It's time for Bert to deliver those moments that happened on this day in sports history.
On this day in sports history, we always go way, way back first here on Overtime. 1889, everyone in the sports world said, hey, maybe this isn't such a good idea moving forward. On this day in 1889, John L. Sullivan successfully defends the last officially sanctioned bare-knuckle World Heavyweight Prize Fighting Championship. Jake Kilrain's trainer threw in the towel after 75 one-minute rounds against John L. Sullivan in an event held near Hattiesburg, Mississippi on this day back in 1889. 1946 on this day, baseball granted a $5,000 minimum salary for all players. 1978, Wimbledon's men's tennis, Bjorn Borg of Sweden wins his third straight singles crown, beating American Jimmy Connors 6-2, 6-2, 6-3 in a straight set victory. 1982, Billy Martin recorded his 1,000th career win as a baseball manager. 1984, similar time, Wimbledon men's tennis, John McEnroe took down and defended his crown, taking down fellow American Jimmy Connors, also in straight sets this day on 1984. 1992 was the debut of the Florida Marlins' new uniform. And on the year 2000 on this day, Wimbledon women's tennis, Venus Williams won her first career Grand Slam singles title, taking down fellow American Lindsay Davenport 6-3, 7-6. 2007, on this day in sports history, Roger Federer of Switzerland won the singles title for the fifth consecutive year at Wimbledon, beating Spaniard Rafael Nadal 7-6, 4-6, 7-6, 2-6, 6-2 in a five-set thriller. And in 2015 on this day, the NFL's then Washington Redskins have their trademark vacated on the grounds that it may cause offense to Native Americans. We all know the history from there. They were the Washington Football Team and now the Washington Commanders. And in 2022, pretty recently on this day in sports history, U.S. gymnast Simone Biles, at 25 years old at the time, became the youngest person to receive the U.S. Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Joe Biden. And birthdays today in the sports world, 1859. Birthday going way back for Hank O'Day, American Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher, umpire, and manager. Umpired 10 different World Series. Was born on this day in Chicago, Illinois in 1859. Passed away in 1935. And lastly, on a short day for birthdays across the sports world, happy birthday to Jack Lambert, the American Pro Football Hall of Fame linebacker. One of the scarier individuals to ever lace it up between the white lines there. Super Bowl winner for Super Bowl 9, 10, 13, and 14. NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 1976. A six-time first-team All-Pro. Nine-time Pro Bowler with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jack Lambert, born on this day in 1952. That's a speedy edition of On This Day in Sports History. There's a lot to get to from the NBA basketball world. Did you miss Bronny James's debut over the weekend? He's a little bit dinged up, and we'll see the latest injury status there for Bronny James, as well as the moves the Timberwolves made late last week. In case you missed them, Joe Ingles is a Minnesota Timberwolf, and others. We'll dive into that news and so much more across the NBA and the world of basketball coming up next on Overtime.
Time is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Moving right along on this Monday edition of Overtime. Thanks so much for being with us as always. Miss any of the show, including any interviews you want to listen back to, podcast links are easy to find, ESPNSiouxFalls.com and on the free ESPN Sioux Falls app. Free agent forward Joe Ingles agreed on a one-year, $3.3 million deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves last week, reuniting him with Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley, former teammates. Once the Timberwolves knew they were losing Kyle Anderson last week in free agency, President of Basketball Operations Tim Connolly engaged with Ingles' agent Mark Bartlestein on landing a deal to bring his three-point shooting and playmaking ability to the Western Conference finalists. Ingles, 36 years old, played with Gobert and Conley in Utah, where they regularly advanced in the playoffs as a unit. Ingles is a career 41% three-point shooter, including 43.5% for Orlando last year, and stands fourth best among active players with over 2,500 attempts since coming to the NBA in the 2014-2015 season. According to ESPN Stats and Info, that trails only J.J. Redick, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson as far as percentage goes. So a big-time addition here, not earth-shattering for Minnesota. Again, they lose Kyle Anderson in free agency. He goes to Golden State. Timberwolves land Joe Ingles, and they also added forward P.J. Dozier last week. The 27-year-old returns from a season in Europe after a torn ACL with the Nuggets in late 2021 caused him to again make his case for an NBA contract, averaged 8.8 points, 2.3 rebounds, and over three assists in 19 minutes per game in the ABA League and in the Euro League. That's the latest there. From the Minnesota Timberwolves' perspective, broad strokes of the NBA over the weekend, free agent forward Miles Bridges isn't going anywhere, agreeing to a three-year, $75 million contract to return to the Charlotte Hornets. According to ESPN on Saturday, Bridges agent Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, busy guy, reached an agreement with Executive VP of Basketball Operations Jeff Peterson on Saturday afternoon, securing Bridges' return to a core that includes All-Star guard LaMelo Ball and promising second-year forward Brandon Miller for the Charlotte Hornets. Bridges is just 26 years old. He explored the possibility of sign-and-trade scenarios, according to ESPN, but ultimately decided to return to Charlotte, averaged 21 points, 7 boards, and 3 assists after missing the entirety of last season amid a plea of no contest for felony domestic abuse, was suspended for 10 games to start this past year, and eventually worked his way back into becoming one of the team's most productive players. And again, Miles Bridges back with the Charlotte Hornets. DeMar DeRozan is on the move. The Sacramento Kings have acquired the free agent guard in a three-year, $74 million sign-and-trade deal. That's according to ESPN on Saturday night. The Kings are trading forward Harrison Barnes and an unprotected pick in 2031 in terms of a pick swap to San Antonio and guard Chris Duarte, 2 second-round draft picks and cash to the Chicago Bulls. Sacramento pursued DeRozan to partner with All-Star guard De'Aaron Fox, All-Star center Domantas Sabonis, and promising youngster Keegan Murray in a bid to become a more explosive offensive team in the Western Conference. DeRozan, very clutch player, very accomplished player. He'll turn 35 next month, 6-time All-Star, coming off an impressive 3-year run with the Bulls in which he made the All-Star team in each of the first 2 campaigns before averaging 24 points, 4 boards, and 5 assists last year, finished second to Steph Curry in voting for the NBA's 2024 Clutch Player of the Year Award. DeRozan, 3-time All-NBA selection, was the 9th pick in the 2009 NBA draft by the Raptors, has played for the Raptors, Spurs, and Bulls across a 15-year career, and now lands out in Sacramento. Before we dive into other news and nuggets and stories from the NBA, quickly an update on the odds. I always like to dive into how these things move and shape the odds. Not necessarily a big needle mover here for DeRozan to the Kings. They still have the 18th best odds, the tied for 18th best odds with Orlando to win the NBA Finals. It still goes like this in the top 10. Boston, way out ahead of everyone else at plus 295. Philadelphia second, OKC third. Denver, the Knicks, the Timberwolves in the top 6. Mavericks are 7th. Bucks, Lakers, and Suns round out the top 10 right now, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. Philadelphia 76ers and their fans are hoping that this new big three, despite the age and despite the wear and tear on the bodies, will lead to some big-time moments. This time a year ago, the 76ers were staring at a very uncertain future. James Harden had demanded a trade. Tyrese Maxey had yet to establish himself as an all-star. And both the 76ers and Joel Embiid, the NBA's then reigning MVP, were coming off yet another disappointing second-round playoff exit. The message then from the franchise, specifically 76ers president of basketball operations Daryl Morey, to its star back then was clear and consistent. Be patient, and we'll provide you with a championship-level team. But while Morey and the Sixers landed Paul George in free agency this offseason, something Philly could do only by being judicious with its resources over the past year to create the max cap space necessary to sign the 9-time All-Star, Embiid admitted to ESPN that he wasn't always sure that the plan would work out. Embiid telling ESPN, "I'm at the point where there's no awards, there's no regular season, no All-NBA or All-Stars that's going to change the way my legacy is. There's a few things that can change it, but the main one is a championship." You're darn right, Joel Embiid. You got to win the big time games. You got to win your conference first. But again, They've got to find a way to compete. They're shooting their best shot this offseason. Paul George is not the greatest player they could have brought to town, but certainly in this market, pretty darn up there for what the Philadelphia 76ers could do and what they are giving their star in Joel Embiid, at least for this next season. It's also a changing of the guard this offseason for the Golden State Warriors. It's going to be, frankly, weird to see this team without Klay Thompson on the floor, without Klay Thompson on the bench at times when he was injured as well. It's been a dynamic duo. It's been a huge part of this dynastic run for Golden State, and things are about to change. Steph Curry, in the wake of Klay Thompson's departure last week to the Mavericks, told ESPN that he believes what the Warriors built with Thompson, Draymond Green, and himself is unlikely to be repeated. Nobody wants their records to be broken. Nobody wants to go anything but the best at the end of their career or quickly after their career. Everybody wants to sit on the couch and says, ha, I was better than that. They can't get it done. Curry saying, I mean, obviously defining a dynasty can take a lot of different looks. People thought this was over in 2019, but 2022 was an amazing championship because we defied the odds. That's 11 years of almost 12 years of championship relevancy built around a certain core. I don't think it'll be replicated just because it's very hard to keep things together in this league. A lot more player movement. Me, Klay, and Draymond, we complemented each other so well for so long. We all brought something different to the table. So we'll see. Records are meant to be broken. Dynasties come in all different shapes and sides. So we'll see. Curry said it, quote, sucks to not have Thompson as his teammate anymore, noting that he desperately wanted him back in a Warriors uniform for one more run. But he noted that equal respect and understanding that Thompson needed a fresh start. And that's perhaps maybe what Steph Curry needs at this point in his career. We'll wait and see. But again, Steph Curry and the Warriors are back into full-on rebuild mode. They're kind of down where the Lakers are. I put the Lakers ahead of them right now, but both of those teams still with a ton of star power, still with a ton of potential, but it's the depth and it's the ancillary pieces that they need to compete with the likes of those heavy hitters now in the Western Conference, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves, the Thunder, and a bunch of other teams that continue their rise in the standings. That's our number one, gone in a hurry. On a Monday, we'll be back with headlines, highlights, and so much more. Chatter from the National Football League, an update on an injury to Dak Prescott. How serious is that, and what's the status? We'll tell you all about it moving forward. Hour number two of Overtime coming up next on a Monday.